Welcome to the Deepdale Podcast, our North Norfolk magazine programme. I'm Jason Borthwick, it's May 2026, and we started with a snippet of the Dawn Chorus, which is simply stunning at this time of year. Our resident blackbird was singing away, circling me and the microphone in an inquisitive way while I recorded. This month I'm talking to lots of North Norfolk artists. First up, we chat about North Norfolk Open Studios with four participating artists: Nell Dalton, Patricia Mullen, Ken Tidd and Nicholas Elliott. We chat about their art, their inspiration and what visitors can expect from visiting artist studios and exhibitions around the county in late May and early June. Then I chat with Nina Bilby and Charlotte Howarth at Holcombe, two master stone carvers, about their Abraxas Academy, their inspiration, their journeys to become artists and the incredible projects they have and are working on. May is a wonderful time to be in Norfolk. The wildlife is awakening. There are lots of events in the diary, including the Lynn Chadwick exhibition at Houghton Hall, the Norfolk and Norwich Festival, Robert Vinson live music gig in our Brick Barn on the 8th of May, the Hunstanton Fun Dog Show on the 8th of May, Shantymen Monday sessions at the Jolly Sailors, markets, and the Anne Boleyn Walk at Blickling. And there's so many more listed on our What's On guide on our website at deepdalecamping.co.uk/events. Really hope you enjoy the listen, and if you do, then we would love you to leave a review on your favourite podcast app or directory. You can find an ever-growing back catalogue of episodes with a whole host of interesting guests who love North Norfolk and know so much about this beautiful part of the world. Please let your friends and family know about this little slice of North Norfolk life.
Skies all open wide, geese go high and over. Oh, now you're a beachcomber, fistful of sand, far sea lavender. See ya next year.
Last year, I visited a few open studios around North Norfolk, and North Norfolk Open Studios is back very shortly, 23rd of May to the 7th of June. And I am sitting with an artist who I have known for a while. We are planning some of her pieces to be at Dalegate Market, and we'll talk about those shortly. But she has the most wonderful little studio here overlooking fields, and I'm going to get her to introduce herself and tell us a bit more about her art. So hello, welcome to Deepdale Podcast.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for coming here.
So tell me, who are you and what sort of art do you do?
I'm Nell Dalton, and I carve. I have carved for many, many years for fun and for restoration jobs in the past, and it's something I can't help but do.
And this is stone rather than wood?
Originally it was wood because I was doing furniture restoration and it was naturally part of that. I've done various other things during my life but continue to carve fun pieces as well. About 12 years ago, I had a go at stone carving because I needed to get more creativity back into my life. And I really enjoyed the freedom that stone gave you. You weren't constricted to the grain. And I thoroughly enjoyed it and just kept on. And now, through modelling clay to work out ideas for carving, I've gone back to something from my younger life where I've actually created some ceramic pieces as well, fired without glazes so they blend with the stone.
Yeah, lovely. I'm looking at some of the pieces in the room here, and there's some stone carving and there's some of the fired pieces. Pieces that you're making for Delgate, they're going to be carved stone or they're going to be the fired clay?
I think we've decided on the fired clay, haven't we? Small panels, because I could get more detail in, almost like cartoons of characters that echo the nature of the shops you have at Delgate and the different aspects of North Norfolk life.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having those in place very soon. What can they expect from coming to visit studios like yourselves?
You can expect to meet the artists, see how they work, see a variety of their work, and the range is huge. It is well worth planning yourself a trail of a variety of artists to see, the plethora. It's the skills, the fun ideas, serious ideas, echoes of Norfolk, whatever. You will, and to speak to the craftspeople and artists, that's something that's very special to me, being able to share with people. But equally, I'm very happy for people to come and quietly browse and not talk to me at all, which I know a lot of people like doing here.
Yeah, I think coming out and meeting the artists is just, I love that aspect of it. And I loved doing the interviews last year, and I've got a couple more interviews after I've seen you. And It's just really nice to see artists in their natural environment, surrounded by their art and their tools and their, their creativity generally, really. And I think it's just fabulous. What inspires you? What grabs you that makes you want to produce art?
I think for me, it wells up inside me. I love the outdoors, and I'm very rarely still. And it's like that energy I put into the figures, I hope. And I hope that it echoes. I enjoy life. The constraints of the body, the energy of the body, how it helps you get out and about and meeting people. That's what fires me, really.
Are you open every day of the studios?
I'm open all the first weekend and through most of the week to the second weekend. In the brochure, I've got Monday the 1st of June penciled in, but my phone number's there. If anybody would like to come and see me and can't make any of those times, just email or call. I'm happy to see people by appointment.
Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing some people, hopefully. Lovely conversations.
In another artist studio, and I am inside a stone, and I'm surrounded by some very, very colourful art with a lady called Patricia, and she's going to introduce herself. So please tell me who you are and what sort of art you do.
I'm Patricia Mullin, and I do bright, quite graphic art. I do folk art, and I was originally a textile designer.
What can people expect from your art? Where would you slot yourself in the world of art?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I like to think I'm unique, but I'm probably not. I'm very descriptive. So there's a story behind everything that I make and paint. I was originally a textile designer for Liberty, and then I kind of accidentally became an illustrator. And then I moved further on again into, I suppose, narrative pictures.
And the piece you're working on at the moment, that's for a big exhibition further down the coast, isn't it?
Yeah, that's for Whiten 26, which starts on, I think, July the 1st. And I'm doing a piece on coastal erosion. It's been really quite interesting to work in a slightly different way. So it's got a real narrative to it, and it's got an important point to it. And the piece is pastel, and it is about eroding coastline, but it also has words in which relate to erosion.
If anybody hasn't been to the Whiten exhibition, you really must go. It's something to behold. It's unexpected. I think the first time I ever sort of stumbled upon it when we were exploring Whiten, and it was, oh my word, this is amazing. Just the most incredible art. So definitely go to that. Before that is North Norfolk Open Studios, and you're opening your studio as part of that. What can people expect from a visit during North Norfolk Open Studios?
Well, it's not the first time I've done it, actually. I was an original Open Studio person in Norwich many, many moons ago and did it about three times in a row there. But it is the first time I've done it in North Norfolk. They'll see some very brightly coloured narrative paintings, works in pastel, works in gouache, which I work in a lot, which is a very flat, clear, medium, opaque, quite bold. The work's quite bold.
Yeah. And you were saying to me that a lot of your pieces are named with sort of a story in mind or something happening sort of off canvas. Tell me a little bit more about how that developed.
Well, I'm also a writer. So I write short stories and novels. And I think everything has a narrative to it. So I started to work with some kind of domestic pictures, really, which have kitchenalia and oysters and other things in them. So I began to wonder what was happening outside of the frame. So I've given them titles that are actually allude to something else happening. Like, for example, when you eat an oyster, you know the sea.
Did you have a very traditional journey into being a textile designer through art college and stuff? Or was it, an, again, like where you are now, sort of something that sort of progressed over time and you stumbled upon?
I don't think anything was very traditional about my upbringing or my life. I went to Colchester School of Art and did a foundation. And yeah, I was 16 years and 4 months. So I went convent school, art school. So that was interesting.
Wow, that's, yeah. Two different extremes.
Two very different extremes. So, and I loved Colchester. And it was a two-year foundation at that point. And I had some wonderful, wonderful teachers, Philip Artizoni and Richard Borden. And in those days, you were actually taught to draw, which I'm so thankful for having that background. Anyway, I then went on to the Central School of Art and Design to do applied textiles, which is now Central St Martin's. After I left Central, I got a job working for the silk buyer in Liberty as his assistant. And I had the idea that I'd one day get his job because he went to fabulous places like China and all over the world. Anyway, I probably thought he was quite old then, but it did dawn on me while I was working there that actually he probably got another 25 years to go. So I wasn't going to hang about. I resigned. What was then called personnel, I think, called me in and said, "Why are you resigning?" And I said, "Well, I want to go back to designing." And they said, "Bring in your portfolio." I then had an interview and was taken on by Liberty. And so that was that journey.
I hope North Norfolk Open Studios is a fabulous experience for you again. I hope you get the piece finished for Whiten, despite the slightly tight deadline. Are you open every day during the North Norfolk Open Studios?
No, I'm doing the three weekends and I'm doing a day during the week, and that day changes for people who have work commitments. So 1 week's a Tuesday, the next one's a Wednesday, and the next one's a Thursday. So hopefully people can fit into those slots.
If you haven't been to North Norfolk Open Studios before, you really need to come along. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Patricia. We will look forward to seeing your studio open in a few weeks' time.
Thanks very much. It's been great fun.
So we're sitting in a very lovely little garden in Fakenham. You can hear Elgar in the background wanting me to throw the frisbee, and we'll throw that for him in a minute. Very cute little pup. And I am with two artists who are both exhibiting at Penthorpe. I'm going to get them to introduce themselves. One I've known for a very long time, and one is new to me, but they produce lovely art, and they are part of the North Norfolk Open Studios.
Hello, I'm Nicholas Elliott.
And I'm Ken Tidd. I'm a watercolourist from Brancaster State. Originally, spent most of my life there, but ended up in Fakenham, and that's where I met Nick.
And what sort of art do you do, Nicholas?
I do a variety of art. I'm predominantly working in oils, work in series of works. So, for example, I might do a series of landscapes, then I'll do a series of still life. But what I'm trying to do with my work is always push it forward. So that switching between one subject matter and another subject matter keeps me lively, it keeps me interested in what I'm doing, and I think it probably sharpens my observation as well.
And you two met, you're both exhibiting together for the North Norfolk Open Studios. You met at the Fakenham Arts Festival, which we were just talking about earlier, saying, you know, what a wonderful event that was with so many artists. And Ken, you were saying that you'd exhibited in a lawyer's.
Each artist was allocated a venue, and so we didn't have a choice in that. And I was given Hazenstorf, and I had visions of maybe they wouldn't be that keen about having artwork in the windows, you know, when they're trying to conduct their business. So I wasn't sure what to expect, but to be truthful, it was wonderful. They embraced the whole thing. They were very enthusiastic, very encouraging, and I really enjoyed my time there. And that became a successful week, and I shared it with two other artists, and they both said the same, a pleasant surprise, you know, and I was really taken with the whole idea.
So how did it come about that you two are going to be exhibiting together at Penthorpe?
Well, it was through the Fakenham Art Festival that we met each other. Ironically, Ken lives only about 3 minutes up the road from me. That was, I suppose, indicative of what was happening at the festival. It was bringing the community together. We got chatting. I exhibited, or have exhibited, at North Norfolk Open Studios quite regularly. I wondered whether Ken would want to join me, because we have different disciplines, and I think what we will have on show at Penthorpe will be a fantastic variety of work. You know, Ken does different subject matter in his watercolour, and as I mentioned earlier, I have different subject matter in oils. So I think we complement each other, and any visitors will have a wide scope of work to look at.
And I've got one of your paintings on my wall, Ken, as you know. I think my parents bought for me a while back.
I go back a long way with your family as well, and your dad was very helpful. When I started out, I decided it might be a good idea to have a little gallery of my own, and so I set one up in Burnham Deepdale, which you know very well, and your dad was the guy who I rented off.
And what inspires you? You know, the beautiful landscapes clearly have a massive influence on your work, but what makes you want to put brush to paint?
This is where it starts to get a bit quirky, really, Jason, because I went to Fakenham Grammar School. I think I came away with two O-levels, one of them being art, believe it or not. When the careers officer weren't that impressed with my ambitions to be an artist, I think he suggested Cox and Wyman's, the printers down the road. And I decided, no, I shall row my own boat, you know, and so I thought, what can I do? So I actually took up the activity of bait digging, lugworm. It sounds very funny, but it's got me a long way. And it was more or less selling fishing bait to tackle shops. Tackle shops need bait. They sell all the other stuff. Where do they get it from? They get it from Norfolk was a big place to get it from. And there were, yeah, I'd say hundreds of people who took up the same livelihood. But what that did was ran alongside my artwork. I mean, it introduced me to what goes on between the coastal road and the sea, really. Quite often I'd look up and, you know, I'd be down amongst the creeks with the birds. I'd be in the sunshine, sometimes take my dog, and I'd look up along the main road. You could see all the cars twinkling along in the sunlight. And I think that's their life and this is mine down here. But I would make observations and come home, and then a lot of my artwork was spawned from the places I worked in, really. So, you know, if you said Skolt Head, the Wash, Blakeney, Stiffkey, the beaches, it gave me a whole thing to work from, really. So the skies and the sunsets and the dawns, I saw them all, and suddenly a new subject matter arrived, you know. It really added to my artistic endeavours. And plus, working with the tides, obviously they're not like a clock, are they? You know, sometimes I'd be in the morning, I'd go out early morning, back by lunchtime, sometimes out at lunchtime, back after sunset. But that also gave me the opportunity during the day to take up my artwork. So my wife was running some pubs, which you know very well, And it really fitted in nicely. I can't believe it, you know. And it gave me a little story that helped me along too. I ended up, I think you know Keith Skipper on Radio Norfolk. He said, oh, come and do an hour on Radio Norfolk. And I said, oh, what do you want me on there? And he said, well, mainly it'll be about your bait digging, but a little bit about your artwork as well. So, all that stuff, it all helped. It was a story. Yeah. It was a story, yeah. Yeah.
And Nicholas, what makes you put paint to canvas?
Oh, well, there's a long story. I did, after my A-levels, I went on to do a foundation art course. And at the completion of that, I had intended to go on and do a degree. But my mother persuaded me not to do that, thinking that I wasn't going to make a living from it. She wasn't far wrong. So I then went into advertising and marketing and did that for far too long, and it was far too stressful. But eventually I sold out of my own marketing company in London and took myself off to India for 2 years, and then off to Andalusia for 4 years, where essentially I picked up not only the desire to continue some sort of artistic expression, but also to teach myself to paint with oil colour. I think really my inspiration is, you know, things that are around us. There is just so much beauty in the world, and it's trying to capture that and put it on a canvas so that you've got some aesthetically pleasing result.
So what can people expect from your exhibition? Are you open every day of the whole open studios?
10 till 5, and it's from May the 23rd to June the 7th. I'm looking forward to it because there's good car parking, there's a coffee shop there, there's stuff to see, you know. So I'm not used to that. I'm used to village halls more than anything, yeah. And I don't dismiss village halls at all. They really fit the bill sometimes, but Pensort will be a different animal.
If you want more information on North Norfolk Open Studios, we'll be all on our links, but just look up North Norfolk Open Studios online. Thank you both very much for being on the podcast. Really looking forward to seeing your exhibition.
I'm Nina Bilby. I'm a freelance stone carver and teacher.
I'm Charlotte Howarth, and I'm a freelance letter carver and teacher.
We are sitting in a lovely little studio. This is Nina's studio, and it is literally filled with pieces of stone in various stages of carving. But there's also lots of other fab, amazing things which you would expect to see in a very artistic studio. Things like a large love heart sweets carved out of stone saying dream girl, which, you know, everybody needs one of those on their wall. Very funky guy, so statue guy with a pair of safety glasses on, and lots of other things. I'll take some photos. Nina, this is your studio, and Charlotte, you work with Nina on lots of different projects, and you both run an academy. How did you end up at Holcombe? How did the whole sort of being here and creating stuff at this particular venue happen?
Well, I ended up owing James Spedding money. So years ago, James made me some chisels, very bespoke, forged chisels, which are they're like hen's teeth, you can't get them. And James, being a genius, said, yeah, I'll have a go at that, maybe some chisels. And then I had a very unfortunate, there was a bereavement in the family, and basically I didn't get back to him for about 15 years. So later on, I saw him at a craft show, and I thought, oh my God, I either ignore him or I face it up and go and say, I owe you money. And we got on immediately, and James asked me where I worked. And at the time, I was in a studio in East London in Walthamstow, working on a very large commission of carving the Queen and Prince Philip for Canterbury Cathedral.
As you do.
And because I live in Wales and didn't necessarily want to be based in London all the time, I asked if he knew of any studio spaces that might be available. So I'd been unable to find anything that I could afford, actually, in the area, which every artist out there knows is a very tricky thing. And with stone carving, you have to have a studio space so you can make mess. James went away and thought about it, and then he gave me a ring and he said, we have a room on the back of our forge that we no longer use because they had dropped from four people to three people in the forge. Come and have a look at it and see what you think. And I literally fell in love. I walked into the room and I thought, whatever that I need to do, I'm going to end up working here, and I'm going to end up working next to Roger and James and Helen, because I fell in love with them at the same time. So my studio is on the back of Holcombe Forge. It faces the kind of gentrified side, if you like. There's the lovely Monica Vinader, beautiful cut gardens and restored barns. And I'm this kind of interesting anomaly in the corner with bits of stone on pallets outside. And I can't tell you how happy I am. It's taken me, you know, almost a career to find a studio as wonderful as this, in a situation as wonderful, on an estate as wonderful, and working with brilliant people next door, which is a constant inspiration.
So Charlotte, you were quite quick to say, this is not my studio, this is Nina's, I'm just here kind of doing some bits and pieces. So where are you based?
I'm based in Westacre, and I've had a home studio there for 25 years, and I love my home studio. But what I've realised is, since I set up Abraxas, since me and Nina set up Abraxas Academy and we've worked more together, is there are times it's worth the drive to come over here and not be isolated by myself and enjoy the absolutely brilliant company of other makers and craftspeople, and work on a few projects with Nina together. So over the years, we've realised where our practices can come together and where our separate skills are. Because although we both carve stone, we've both got very different skill sets with a sort of overlapping bit in the middle. I'm currently helping Nina do some carving. So in what I'm doing at the moment, Nina is definitely the master and I'm under her eye. You know, it could flip if we were doing lettering. That's my skill, is lettering. It's just pull the face.
Nina, what would you describe your specialism as being?
Well, historically, throughout my very long career, I've been an architectural stone carver. So that means I replace decorative elements of large architectural buildings, things like the House of Parliament, you know, Brighton Pavilion, Hereford Cathedral, various places. But as the years gone on, I've moved into more bespoke architectural detail for new pieces, if you like, for heritage buildings and world monument sites. So new statues or new replacement statues, perhaps they don't quite know what was there before, but they've got an idea of what was there before. And then I realise and design and install what could have been there before with research and archival information. I'm also a sculptor, so I also make sculptures in stone, and I also teach younger people, BAs and MAs, to carve stone in a very traditional way. So it's not much different than it would have been 200, 300 years ago. And that's how I was trained, and that's how I work, and that's how I pass on the skills, as does Charlotte. But in this studio at the moment, we are full of objects that are going to a very prestigious restoration project that are newly designed, because they are so badly damaged nobody really knows what's there, and we're carving and are going to install them in about 2 months. So it's Temple Church off Fleet Street. It's a Knights Templar church, the first one in the UK, or one of the first ones in the UK, and it was consecrated in 1180. And since then, it's had multiple kind of restoration schemes, to the point where, you know, we're not sure who introduced what. So there might have been a restoration scheme in the 1400s and then the 1800s, and then it was hit in the Blitz. And so it's this kind of mishmash of restoration and reinterpretation. But the door itself, which is as important as Rochester Cathedral, there's a door in Rochester that's very similar age. You know, it's one of the most important Romanesque doors in the country, but actually has had very little focal public attention, other than Dan Brown in the Da Vinci Code, who uses it. And now, finally, the funds have been raised and the trust has been able to restore it to its former glory.
I guess that's kind of part of what you do most of the time, is looking at what was there and trying to replace with something that's as authentic. Talking of the Knights Templar, I went to Malta and I love what they've done around Valletta with the way that they've kind of almost put a line, and they've created the new walls and next to the old, to try and kind of keep the, yeah, so they can actually sort of show this is new work, this is old work, but it gives you that feel of what it must have been like when it was a complete city, you know, completely walled in.
I think a colleague of mine often says, like, pointillism, you know, you put new in, you restore some old, and you indicate what could have been there in a kind of overall holistic way, in a very cohesive, it's got to be harmonious, the restoration and the introduction of you has to be done harmoniously across the building. And so it doesn't stick when you look at it. You know, your eye doesn't stick at something. So it's about an introduction of new objects. It's about toning in with shelter-coated kind of like lime washes to kind of bring the new slightly toned down to blend in with the old, and then a conservation of the old and bringing it together so it works and has the impact that it would have been. Of course, it will never have the impact, because most buildings of that age, etc., would have been highly decorated and painted colours, bright colours. We're sticking to stone. Yeah, it's a fascinating job.
And Charlotte?
So my specialism is lettering, hand-drawn, handmade letter forms, predominantly carved in stone, but I work in a broad range of materials, metal, wood, plastic. I've got good digital skills as well, so I sometimes digitise my letter forms, and once you can do that, you can output them to a whole range of different processes. Together, with James next door, we made the LGBT Armed Forces Memorials, which was a brilliant collaboration, and I drew and digitised all the letter forms and made the structure of the letters fit together in a way that doesn't look forced, I hope.
You're constantly being approached by local people for very personal, small and large memorials. So the whole of North Norfolk is peppered with Charlotte's work and your stepfather's work. You've got a bit of a lineage of your craft, haven't you?
Yeah, so my work is predominantly memorials, but not exclusively. And quite a lot of, in the last sort of 5-10 years, quite a lot of work in cathedrals. St Paul's Cathedral, I worked on the lettering for the new COVID memorial, which is the new north entrance, and work in Westminster Abbey, working with a stained glass company down at Canterbury Cathedral, who made the most beautiful stained glass windows to go in the Queen's Gallery. And there was I always say I'm a small part of a big project. And I designed all the lettering for the donor windows and went down and worked with the cathedral studios and helped them to produce the stained glass with my lettering and design skills. So it can be really varied. So stone is very central and letters are very central. But within that, there's a real range of material possibilities, because it's fundamentally about lettering and design.
So tell me, Nina, how did you end up doing this?
That's a really long story. I'm not going to bore everybody with that. But so I was I'm a Wells girl. I went to school at Wells. Ended up at King's Lynn Tech, which I loved. And then I ended up in London doing a sculpture degree. And from there, I didn't know what to do with life, as many fine arts graduates don't know what to do. And I found myself eventually working in America, believe it or not, and met these incredible stone carvers and ended up in their workshop doing it like unpaid internship there. They were trained by English stonemasons and carvers. So when I came back to England, I was given letters of introduction to these people and ended up training in East London. Actually, at the time, it was in Warren Street, at the Building Crafts College, and got a qualification in masonry. I also became a high school teacher and taught, high school for about 8 or 10 years. And the two kind of coincided. They ran alongside each other and I wasn't quite sure what to do. And then I got a really lovely opportunity to work with some brilliant people here and then realised that was what my dream, my passion was. From there, it's been a very slow accumulation of jobs and reputation and, you know, getting experience. And I think that 10,000 hours thing really does. It means a lot when you're carving stone. Later in life, I managed to go freelance. I got some really nice big commissions through sheer, being dogmatic and really going for it. And then it's been really organic, actually, a slow grow. It's not, you know, when you think of Instagram, you look at kind of social media, you think people immediately spring out of their 20s and get into this incredible career. And I don't know anybody who's done that. Everybody's slowly, slowly, incrementally getting the experience. And that's what craft is about. It's about accumulating the skills to push yourself every time and then be slightly more ambitious. And you're slightly more ambitious every project, you end up having this really interesting portfolio which opens you up to other works. We are both certified master carvers. We're at that point in our careers where we can take on enormously prestigious projects. I think I'm a stone carver because I can't imagine doing anything else. My hands love it, my head loves it, and most of all, it's joyful every single day. So my heart definitely is stone, made of stone.
So Shana, how did you get into stone carving? What kind of took you to this?
My mother married my stepfather. She met him when I was 15, married him when I was 17, and he came into our life, and he was just a wonderful person, and he was a letter carver. And he was working out of a bedroom in his house in Hunstanton. And he always used to joke that when he saw my mum's garden, it had this old derelict workshop in it, that he was as attracted to the derelict workshop as he was to my mother. And I think many makers can understand that. And so he moved in and set a letter carving workshop up in Westacre. So, you know, as a teenager, he was always there in my life. And he put a calligraphy pen in my hand when I was 16 or 17. And he showed me how to do calligraphy. And the minute that pen hit the paper, the blinkers went on and I became the biggest lettering nerd that you would ever meet for the next 35 years. And he taught me calligraphy. And I was doing, like Nina, I'm a Norfolk girl. I grew up in Westacre from the ages of 11, went to Norfolk Tech, which I don't think it's called Tech anymore, Norfolk College of Arts, it used to be, and had...
We had the same tutors.
Just by chance, I had the most amazing art teacher who was a very well-known calligrapher. And so I did an A-level in calligraphy. I'm the only person I've ever met that did an A-level in art and calligraphy. And he was a brilliant inspiration early on with my stepfather. And my stepfather had an assistant at the time called Susan Taylor. And she said these magic words, I'll never forget them. She said, Charlotte, why don't you apply to do the lettering course at City and Guilds? They'll take anybody. And they did. And so I then went on to study lettering at the City and Guilds of London Art School and was introduced a little bit more to stone carving. I did a bit of letter carving with my stepfather. And after college, I worked for Richard Kindersley, who he died late last year, but he was one of the most influential lettering artists, carvers that the UK has had. And it just was a brilliant training. And so that was really how I got into letters. Letters have always been my passion, but with lettering comes the use of stone, because predominantly you make a living through carving stone, memorials, headstones. And that's all I've ever done. I've worked for a number of different people. I worked for a sculptor in Ireland for 5 years. He did a lot of big figurative carvings that I would just tip around the edges on. But I got a real feel for stone in Ireland. And I always think the thing about carving letters is it's very 2D and shallow. So I then had this other introduction to stone as a more malleable material, not a piece of paper. I moved back to Norfolk in 2000 and took my stepfather's workshop over in Westacre and just started building up my practice, getting more commissions. And like Nina says, we met and I think fundamentally we like each other and we enjoy each other's company and we have a really fun, joyful relationship working together. And it just felt too good not to do something more lasting, I think, together, really. So it was never planned to create Abraxas Academy. As Nina said, it's evolved very organically. You know, we don't have any specific direction or anything, but
What we do love is we both love our work. We're incredibly passionate about what we do, but we also love passing it on. I always feel about my skills that they're not mine, but they've been entrusted to me, and I have a responsibility to make sure that they don't die with me, that they are passed on. And the generosity of teaching that I've experienced in my career early on in particular, you can't repay back those people who were generous to you. You can only pass it on and pass it forward. And I think we both have that feeling of the necessity of, you know, these skills are so hard won. And in a way, we take them for granted, don't we? We know how to knock stone around. We know how to cut an edge. We know how to make a bit of flat. And it just looks so easy, but actually it's so difficult. But we forget that learning curve because it's at our fingertips. You know, we are, you know, we're at the peak of our profession. We've both had 35 years of experience behind us now, and you know, the material knowledge is at our fingertips. In a way, it only takes a lifetime to acquire, and it's a great privilege to have been able to reach that period of our lives, really.
Yeah. Where did the name of the academy come from?
Well, I thought, well, it's got to be A, isn't it? It's got to be, you know, A, B, C, D. It's got to be at the beginning of the alphabet, hasn't it? So I opened up an architectural historic dictionary, and basically an Abraxas object. Well, there's the god Abraxas, who is a bit of a shapeshifter. But in Greece, Charlotte did a brilliant Churchill fellowship and went and studied in Italy and Greece, looking at letters and Trajan alphabet. Near the Acropolis and around that area, they often find small carved tokens with letters in. And they were offerings or votives for promises or wishes, a little bit like you'd find at Walsingham. You know, you'll find a foot or an arm, depending if somebody's got a bad leg. You know, you'd go and you'd put this with an offering and wish for the divine to intervene and, you know, make somebody better, or, you know, prosperity, or, you know, a new wife or whatever you want. And it just felt right, like an Abraxas of it. We are offering, we both produce artifacts, etc., that I hope give people joy. And, you know, it just felt right.
If people want to know more about you guys individually as stone carvers and lettering, or about the courses that you offer, where do they find more information?
We have a website, abraxasacademy.com. I get it wrong every time. Braxtonacademy.co.uk. Or you can look us up individually as individual makers. We have our own web, Charlotte Howarth, Nina Bilby.
In terms of the courses, are they short courses? Are they sort of long, kind of, you know, year-long courses? What sort of options are there?
Well, we're actually in development of that. At the minute, we're running sort of short courses, so 2 to 3 days maximum courses. But we are just in negotiation with Holcomb. Actually, I'm sure they won't mind me saying this. Of renting another space here to run slightly longer courses, so it's much more space and it's got a lot more opportunity to do more intense courses. And I know Charlotte's very keen to run things like on gilding and painted letters, memorial making. I'd like to do, you know, we're going to do model making, etc., maquette building, stone carving, lots and lots of different types. So that's actually in the pipeline, and we should take receipt of the workshop in the next few weeks, which is brilliant. And it's also brilliant to be centred here on the estate.
We run our own podcast. It's very nerdy. It is the Stone Carving and Lettering Takeaway. It's a real professional-based content, but if people are interested in it, they can definitely give us a listen.
Thank you for inviting me to your workshop. Really lovely to be here. I will definitely have to take some photos because there's so many wonderful things to look at in this place.
I'm very impressed with Charlotte being able to tolerate it, because her workshop is so clean and so ordered. She knows where everything is, and she walks in here and basically it's the mind of a hoarder. I'm a medieval hoarder made real.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Deepdale Podcast. Please do leave a review on your favourite podcast app or directory, and please tell your friends and family about our little slice of North Norfolk life. We'll be back in June with another episode. In the meantime, enjoy the back catalogue of episodes when we've chatted with fabulous people about beautiful North Norfolk.
Skies all open wide, geese go high and over. Oh, now you're a beachcomber, fistful of samphire, sea lavender. See you next year.